Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. On Thursday, 11th of October, Pope Benedict is scheduled to preside over Holy Mass for the launching of the Year of Faith, timed to coincide with a date which marked the beginning of the Second Vatican Council that was half a century ago. On this occasion, prior to Holy Mass in St. Peter's Square, there will be readings from the four Vatican II dogmatic constitutions, the council documents to have the highest level of authority. Among these, De Verbum on Divine Revelation, a document promulgated by Pope Paul VI on the 18th of November 1965, when the Second Vatican Council was drawing to a close. In an effort to shed light on De Verbum, placing it within the broader context of the Council documents, as well as highlight its relevance today, I thought I'd speak to the Dean of the Faculty of Church History and Fine Arts of the Church at the Pontifical Gregorian University here in Rome. He's Jesuit Professor Norman Tanner, who also happens to be author of a book on the Councils of the Church.
It's an important document. It's one of the 16 documents promulgated, approved by the Second Vatican Council, and is actually called a constitution. So there are three levels of authority in these 16 documents. The lowest is what are called declarations, and then nine of them are called decrees, and then four of them have the highest level of authority, constitutions.
These constitutions were four then. The first, Sacrosanctum Concilium on the Sacred Liturgy in 1963. The second, Lumen Gentium on the Church in 1964. Gaudium et Spes on the Church in the Modern World in December 1965. And a month earlier then, De Verbum on Divine Revelation. What exactly did it entail at the time? I mean, why was it important to have a document on Revelation?
One of the key moves in Vatican II, of course, was ecumenism and better relations with especially the Protestant churches, with the Orthodox Church. And the question of Scripture had been an issue since the Reformation, of course, in the 1500s. Protestants had emphasized very much the importance of Scripture and had downplayed, you might say, the role of tradition. So Trent, which replied to the Protestant Reformation in the late 1500s, mentioned the importance of both Scripture, the Bible, and tradition, the teaching of the Church subsequently. But it was criticized a bit for putting them a bit too separately, as if the Bible and then the statements of the Pope and other church authorities are two sort of separate things. It's not actually fair to Trent, that criticism, in my opinion, but nevertheless it was particularly to answer that criticism that Catholics taught a sort of two-source theory of Scripture and tradition as two separate things, that Vatican II issued this important document, quite short document, about 20 pages, one of the shorter documents, but one of the most influential and important, in which the two, Scripture and tradition, were pulled together.
Why did they set up a commission that was both doctrinal and ecumenical to sort this document out? And that was John XXIII who did that.
Yes, it's called a Constitutione Dogmatica. So in that sense, it is principally a dogmatic teaching, but obviously all dogmas, teaching, has pastoral implications. It's not just teaching up there, as it were, but it's very influential on the way Christians live. And in that sense, obviously, it's pastoral.
What is its relevance today? Is it still relevant, this document, today?
Oh, yes, absolutely, I think, because it's healed the different approaches that had existed between Catholics and other Christians, especially the Christians of the Reformation. On this point, Catholics and Orthodox had really held the same line. There wasn't an important difference, but between Catholics and Protestants, there was an important difference going back to the Reformation, where the Protestants felt that tradition, the church teaching and customs and devotions and so on had become too important in the life of the church and also in the understanding of Scripture, and they emphasized very much sola scriptura, just Scripture. And so Trent responded to that, saying, well, Scripture is essential, but we also need the understanding of the church, the lived interpretation of Scripture, and Scripture needs to be constantly reinterpreted by living people. Perhaps I'll just add there one further point, that sometimes Trent is accused of teaching a two-source theory, as if Scripture and tradition are separate. But if you look at it carefully, no, it's not two sources, but two channels. There's one source, which is Christ, the teaching of Christ. And this comes to us through two channels, two ways, two paths, through Scripture and tradition. So it's one source, Christ, especially his teaching, the way he taught, and then two ways in which this teaching comes to us. And on that point too, Vatican II has a significant development. Again, we have the one source, Christ, but it's more the person of Christ, the mystery of Christ, which of course includes his teaching, but not simply his teaching. Trent can be interpreted a bit as if Christ is a kind of schoolmaster or a teacher, and the one source is what he taught, whereas Vatican II, it's more the person of Christ, which obviously includes what he taught, the mystery of Christ, and this comes to us through these two channels, through these two paths. So both Trent and Vatican II, we have the one primary source and then the two channels through which this one source comes to us. And that, of course, is a teaching which is acceptable to the Orthodox, certainly, and also to most Protestants, where they too would emphasize very much that the fullness of truth is contained in the mystery of Christ, and that it comes to us then through both Scripture and also there's a role in tradition. So it's true the Catholics would still emphasize more the importance of tradition, a living tradition in which you need church authorities to explain, especially on points of difficulty and how it should be interpreted today. But nevertheless, one can understand why De Verbum, the document on Revelation, De Verbum, that's the first two words with which the decree begins, is indeed a very ecumenical decree, and it's important in itself, but it's very much linked to that other key dimension of Vatican II, ecumenism, an attempt to have proclaimed teaching which is acceptable, will help with the reunion of all Christians.
And now we've heard Professor Norman Tanner's words there, focusing on the dogmatic constitution on divine revelation, De Verbum. Why not read an excerpt from the preface of this document? It's read for us by Chris Altieri.
Following in the footsteps of the Council of Trent and of the First Vatican Council, this present council wishes to set forth authentic doctrine on divine revelation and how it is handed on, so that by hearing the message of salvation, the whole world may believe, by believing it may hope, and by hoping it may love.
And my thanks there go to the Dean of the Faculty of Church History and Fine Arts of the Church, Jesuit Professor Norman Tanner, author of The Councils of the Church. I'm Veronica Scarsbrick.